is there any particular way you want to get this going? You want to ask straight away? I think I've seen that you all are active with the investor calls and you have been following the company. You have a good understanding. Probably you have more understanding than me because I'm only 9 months into the company. So, how would you like to get started?
I'm good straight with you.
You are recording it too.
We don't, I mean, I love to manage mine.
Okay. So, typically, what's your understanding of endurance? So, you know that when the company started, where we are today, what is our kind of market. So, typically, we have if you look at 10,300 crores of 23-24, 25% of that came from our European operations, the rest came from Indian operations. In India, if you look at the revenue breakup, 5-6% is from four-wheeler business, another 5% is from aftermarket, the rest is into two-wheeler. And within that rest, 40% is from Bajaj, the rest is from other customers. And our product ranges, castings, which is about 28%, 30% is from suspensions, 15% is from braking, and then we have casting, suspension, and alloy wheels is another important bit of a business.
So I think the fastest growing segment for us right now.
Which one?
Alloy wheels,
yes. We are investing, we just made an announcement that we are starting a new plant. So if you want to understand it in numbers, about 240,000 alloy wheels per month is made in our Chakan plant. And this plant will make about 180,000, and it looks like as though by the time we start our job one in August 2025 from the new plant, we'll be already having orders full for that plant also.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting aspect about that plant is the intention is to use all the lessons learned from our Chakan plant that make it efficient right from day one.
Okay.
So that's largely our business. And if you want to understand our aim, at least, in the next, in the coming years, I will not give you any numbers, but what we would be doing is the bigger, from a low-hanging fruit perspective, we will try to increase our presence, our share of business with all the OEMs, where we already are present in all the product lines in some of their models. We are trying to get that in their new models. We will try to get our, get the businesses. That's what we are working on. That's point number one. And two is improve our aftermarket, because today only 5% of our total revenue is coming from aftermarket, but at least for a company our size with proprietary products where we own the designs, we should at least look at 10%. So that's another thing we are working on. We are trying to see how do we make inroads into the four-wheeler market. We already have set up, we are setting up another factory, which we made an announcement 3 or 4 quarters ago in Aurangabad. In Auric Shendra, the alloy wheel plant is coming in Auric Bidkin. In Auric Shendra, we are having a plant which is coming up, which is dedicated for four wheelers, and that will be four wheelers castings with special kind of machining and special kind of surface treatment and special welding. And there is a lot of interest already in those plants, and that will also cater to the non-auto market.
There is Auric, there is MG plant coming up, right? There is Ether plant coming up around, and then there is Toyota plant coming up, right, which is nearby.
Yeah, MG is what? Is JSW.
JSW.
Correct, so JSW Green.
That's MG, right?
Correct. So there is Shendra, there
so
is
Bidkin. So what is the size of those, what kind of vehicle units plants they are putting up there?
I'm not completely aware. They only have made announcements, so please sit.
So in terms of four-wheeler, there is Toyota and then there is JSW.
JSW, great.
And then Ether will be a for two-wheeler.
It's for two-wheeler.
So these are the two four-wheeler plants which are coming up?
Yeah. But
around Auric City.
Correct. But they have taken huge areas of land. Their exact plans of that we are not privy to.
Okay.
And we only can look at the papers and say what that space is. But we are at two. We'll get to know as and when they make more announcements and then we'll see.
And in aluminum, we don't do forging, right? Or we do?
We do forgings. Interestingly, we do something called the inverted front fork, right? As a product, which was a product we did. We are the first ones to make in India.
Right.
We did it for a European customer. But then we had to import the forgings from Europe. And as a backward integration, we started the forging operations. It was an uphill task to get the quality cleared. But after that, what is actually a component manufacturing in-house, now we are slowly seeing interest from OEMs also to in terms of forging, because for their lightweighting requirements, they need it. So while we have not started business anywhere, but we are working closely with OEMs to see if we could supply forgings also.
So this is the one that was being spoken about in the call, that 48mm inverted for a, and now you're putting up a forging plant also for
this. We already have a forging plant.
You already have one.
Yes. And it's been working for some time now. And it's able to give the kind of quality requirements that those.
And in India, any CC plus minus bikes which use this inverted fork right now?
Yes, these are essentially 300 plus.
300 plus.
Plus, yeah.
So for us, it will be largely RE, maybe
RE, Bajaj,
X440. And
some Bajaj Pulsar are also using this inverted front fork, and KTMs which we export, which are made here.
We will be the supplier, right, in case of Bajaj?
Yes, even RE for the inverted front fork, we are the suppliers. There's no one else who makes it.
So there, 100% of RE 350cc plus, Bajaj Pulsar and anything which is to do with the...
No, only if they use inverted front fork.
Okay, so not everything in 350 also uses it.
Yeah, it is
and
more applicable.
Is there something like a migration which is happening right now?
As and when they introduce new models, they are trying to introduce this, because this is a better technology. So for the old ones, generally they will not do it.
So there is a refresh also, they will probably go to the...
Probably, yes.
And as I understand from the conference call, in most of the plants, we are actually hitting the full capacity, whether it is suspension, whether it is... alloy wheels, whether it is brakes, everywhere. So there will be a capex cycle which will be down the line, right, for all the plants in all the products.
Yes. So if you see, when it comes to anything pertaining to castings, the investment is high. Anything pertaining to aluminum castings. So that's what you would see in the alloy wheel. We have to set up a new plant altogether. So all that which we could do in terms of removing bottlenecks and hitting the capacity to maximum. In Chakan, it is exhaustion. So we are setting up a new plant. But for all other products which we call proprietary in nature, it is essentially elimination of bottlenecks. For instance, if you look at our Narsapura plant, we just have to increase the capacity in our powder coating and paint shop.
Achha.
Then we increase the capacity significantly. So it's more a play of debottlenecking wherever required. So the capex, if you had seen, we have been doing a regular 350-400 crore in the past 3-4 years. And this year it will be slightly higher because we are setting up these two new greenfield ventures. And going forward, we will still continue to have the same kind of capex, and that will take care of whatever capacity increase is required. Welcome back, Raj.
Thank you. Sorry, I had to step out for something.
On the four-wheeler front, we were working on a lot of, you know, validations on new products with in various passenger vehicles like Mahindra and other players as well. So what's the kind of, you know, the situation there? Any timelines with respect to starting of production for supplies there?
So if you look at from a casting perspective, so from our plants, so in the southern part of India, and we are already supplying to Hyundai Kia. I think we also supply four-wheeler castings to Tata and Mahindra also.
Tata and Mahindra, and also we export to Ford's requirements.
So that is happening. So castings is happening. For other product lines, we in the latest investor call, we mentioned that there is a product for which we are in an advanced stage of getting a nomination, which goes into the drivetrain. So that we will disclose as and when it is appropriate to do so. So that's something which we are reading across our capabilities in our three-wheelers. We are reading across to the four-wheelers. So that's happening.
So supplies to three-wheelers have started?
That's happening for quite some time now. Yeah. Okay, I'll not be able to specifically tell you which product it is. We are not allowed to, but things are moving in the right direction there. And now comes the other element where there is more...
That product is already part of the three-wheeler, which is today about 8% of our top line. We are replicating the same product for a four-wheeler in drivetrain. Is that what I heard?
Yeah,
the four-wheeler product which you didn't disclose...
I will not be able to exactly tell you what it is, because if I tell as many words, it's very easy for you to guess. So I will not give you that comfort. I'm sorry. It's more determined by the OEM, who do now is not willing that we should discuss. So we'll wait. It's not. It's
but
not very
but fun. From 25 to 45 journey of four wheeler as a part of our total revenue. What more needs to be done beyond what we are launching today?
Okay, so
rather what we are going to do in let's say next few.
So if you look at 25% is essentially Europe being 100% four wheeler.
Right.
I mean 90% four wheeler.
Right.
So that would anyway grow with their organic and inorganic initiatives, which they are continuously pursuing. From India perspective, we are only present in the casting business today. And we are setting up this new plant, which will also do specialty castings and machining for four-wheeler. So that will help. Beyond this, there is a lot of work happening in various stages of progress. And we will be making, we will explain as and when things happen. In products which today we are good in the two-wheeler business, let us say suspension, braking, we are good in that. And those we will be reading across into the four-wheeler business. But we are working in here, again, when it comes to four-wheeler, there's a validation cycle, there's a technology requirement. So we're working with various agencies to get all that done. And then when it is, when the time is right, we'll make the announcements.
But in some of these products in the four-wheeler, there are large MNCs which are already there. So you'll have to displace some of those, right? And it may not be as...
We have a history of such displacements. So in the two-wheeler space and in the three-wheeler space, so historically if you see three-wheeler brakes was dominated by Bosch.
Right.
When we came into the picture, we have, in Bajaj now we are 100% source and we are the dominant player. Yeah, when it comes to ABS, 3 years ago the entire market was controlled by Bosch and Continental.
Sorry, which one?
Anti-lock braking system for two-wheelers. Yeah, today we control more than 10% of the market. And hopefully in the next 6 months, we will reach 20%.
So that is a huge advantage if you see. That only we only have MNCs today present. But what happened is, if you say endurance, I will not talk about anyone else. If you just look at endurance, the entire value chain, right from product development, the R&D, sourcing, everything is within India, within which is captive to us. And we can even do the testing of those within our 21 acre test track. So that is the advantage we will have. So once we get started, then the overall reduction in the product development life cycle will be a big advantage for OEMs and they will come to us repeatedly. And in terms of how much inventory they have to carry, in the Alavi that was the biggest sell. When they were importing from China, they had to keep 90 to 120 days of stock. Today they manage it just in time. And when Kelvin saw in terms of whenever they want to change a model at the drop of a hat, we are there to supply. So that these are the advantages which endurance would offer compared to...
See, our current competition in two-wheeler brakes is an Italian company called Brembo. In two-wheeler clutches, it's a Japanese company called FCC. There are no Indian players in this space. So even in four-wheelers, if we have to compete against the big multinational players, we'll do that.
If I look at India only, currently how big would be the four-wheeler revenue mix for us?
8% or so.
And if I have to look at it 3 years down the line?
Should be around 20-25%.
If we have
by
to reach our stated objective.
Yeah.
Four-wheeler, I think for the first 5 years
down the line. Yeah.
25.
Yeah.
Sorry, 6% going up to 25. This is by 2030, that's the target, right?
Yeah. So this will require multiple actions at our end. It will require M&A, it will require technology agreements, it will require more orders in the products like castings and forgings, which we already do. Yeah. And in terms of a mindset, we've already come to that mindset that we have to do more on four-wheeler side. For instance, when we are shifting our suspensions R&D to a new facility, because we were cramped for space in our current suspension R&D center. Yeah, we are designing the new center in such a way that there is enough and more room for equipment that will be required for four-wheeler suspensions testing.
And then on Europe, what is the situation there? How is the demand scenario overall?
Demand scenario is not healthy in Europe. So last quarter we saw a YOY degrowth of 6.4%.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For us there was a YOY growth of 6.4%. So
mm-hmm.
we were able to beat the negative market conditions. That's because of two reasons. One is that in the last four and a half years we've won a number of orders, mainly in the EV space. So our growth, if you see in Europe, our turnover growth,
mm-hmm.
the ICE sales have remained flat. But
mm-hmm.
the growth has come because we have done more sales to the EV segment. That's because
mm-hmm.
of all the orders that we've won for EVs. The second driver for growth, and that will play out in the future also, is that we are extremely strong. Financially, we are strong. In Europe also, we are sitting on cash. Yeah. But many of our competitors have faced a difficult time and they've not been able to come out of the rough time, due to which they have not been able to produce and supply. That has put stronger players like us in a favorable position as far as the OEMs are concerned.
In Europe, you are seeing a lot of transition happening towards hybrid as well. So with the products that we supply,
yeah.
Are they kind of, you know, fungible tomorrow if the need be, and you know, the clients who ask us for that.
Yeah, so already 50% of the new cars sold in Europe are
yeah.
either EVs or hybrids.
Correct.
Yeah. We have a disproportionately high share of new orders in the last four and a half years. Like I told you, many of the players who were weak have not been able to survive the onslaught of high energy prices, low volumes. Yeah.
Mm.
And that has given us an advantage. Our products, you are asking about the relevance of our products. So in hybrids, there will be an engine where all our engine parts which we do for ICE will be required there also.
Okay.
In EVs which don't have an engine, we do a lot of transmission parts. So here's a pictorial representation that our Europe head has given us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there are, this is to counter a perception that people say that EVs probably don't have enough aluminium parts.
Hmm.
Yeah, so aluminium parts are not only there in EVs, but they are also large and complex.
Hmm.
Yeah, and our parts, I mean, our parts are not only relevant for hybrids, we are already supplying a lot of parts for hybrids.
Achha, so
yeah.
already are.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well entrenched into it.
So even this transition in that sense, either because the reason I'm asking you these questions are in many places, if I'm speaking to vendors, hybrids actually are, you know, better margin products for them. And if they're supplying to hybrid, you know, models in that sense. So for us, I just wanted to understand, because many times they say
Massimo,
hybrid helps us.
No, what Massimo explains is that because of the transition plan of the EU governments, yeah, the expected life of pure EV models
mm-hmm.
is going to be longer than the expected life of ICE or hybrid models.
Okay.
Therefore, most ancillaries, when they
mm-hmm.
take a hybrid order, they build that into it. We
okay.
also. We build that into it and therefore demand higher margins when it is a ICE or a hybrid new order.
Mm-hmm.
In the EV, we know that. See, in ICE, we also had this challenge of Euro 1, Euro 2, Euro 3, Euro 4. So every now and then, the design kept
yes.
changing.
Yes.
And as a casting supplier, we had to keep making new dies or changing our production
Correct.
Setups.
Correct.
Yeah. In EVs, that challenge is gone.
Correct.
Once it's EV, the I mean, whatever design, Porsche or Audi, whatever they finalize, hopefully it'll stay for 8-9 years.
Hmm.
So we look at longer program duration when it comes to EV. And accordingly, we give some price advantage and we take some margin cuts in EVs. But in hybrids and ICE, we keep the margins high.
We are already supplying to the ICE. So typically in hybrids, you have, it's like an ICE plus a battery power.
Correct.
So largely, the content is safe.
Yeah, because I think both your parts will go, right? Engine parts
in hybrids
for
there
the
is more content
yeah.
depends on what kind of
for transmission.
What kind of parts are there, like if it's a mild hybrid or something, if it is plug-in kind of thing, then it's a different thing. But the ICE portion is safe,
yeah.
The other portion, they will need more parts,
Typically, for the same size of car, Achala, the hybrid, because it also has a battery powered engine,
correct,
the engine is a little smaller than an ICE engine.
Correct.
Yeah. But net net, yes, there are both powertrains and therefore more aluminium.
I mean, you wouldn't have a sense as to how much part of our revenue comes from hybrids as such. Or you're just clubbing it with EVs as of now.
We are only
tracking the total revenue as such.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this breakup probably we'll see if we can
get it,
to track it going forward. Because as of now, with the kind of turmoil the market is going through, any revenue is good revenue. So.
Yeah.
The issue with that, we tried to do it because obviously analysts and investors ask us this question as to how much of your Europe sales are going into EVs and hybrids. Our problem is that when we supply a certain part to a customer, there are customers who buy the same parts and use it across multiple vehicles. So we are not able to tell you exactly how much is going to EV or hybrid. Yeah.
And the outlook there continues to be challenging on the industry growth front?
Yes.
Yeah, it's continuing to be challenging. Because there's a lot of uncertainty in that. Now, I think the European government is insisting on electric vehicles.
Yes.
They're going to charge a penalty of about 45 euros for every gram of CO2 which they release through the vehicles.
Mm.
So the European car makers will have to anyway get into electric vehicles, but till the time they would like to experiment, but the consumers are not ready to buy the high cost vehicles.
Exactly.
So till the time they would like to make as many ICEs and sell and see to that they are sustaining, and then see how things go. So it is a kind of a confusing situation. So it's not only for the OEMs, then you have the tier ones which are going through their own difficult situation. So, and the governments are not that strong. It is a situation, but knowing Europe's inherent strength in their technology and that region itself, is it will come back. We have to just see that we have to wait through this, and then things will definitely improve.
No major support coming from the governments there, like, you know, subsidies or FAME like thing for buying electric vehicles, because from what I hear, majority of
they had all those subsidies. Now they're discontinuing.
They have not continued.
Yeah, they've reduced or discontinued it. Yeah.
Somebody was giving an interesting insight. Like in Europe, in China, if you order an electric vehicle, you get the registration done in one day. If you order an ICE, you will get the registration done after 1 year.
Oh.
You have to wait for 1 year to get your number plate. So that's how they are making EVs more dominant. But in Europe,
so what, you can't drive a car for 1 year after you buy.
it's like that's how they are controlling.
They can ban it also, right?
This is how they are controlling, and that's why you see such proliferation of electric vehicles in China, and because they have invested heavily in the entire value chain. And in Europe, we have to see how things evolve, and it's also, you know, all the governments are transitionary, and we don't have the kind of strong leaders which we had earlier. But we are also seeing that for us, it's not a big problem. Whatever, they have to make cars.
Correct.
And whatever cars they make, we are getting more and more orders into that, and we are well, we have a good strong pipeline. So as endurance, we are okay. Will the market come back? If it's 1 quarter, 2 quarters, or 3 quarters, we have to wait and watch. But it will definitely come back.
And on the costs front, how are we kind of covered? Because I've heard in Germany and everywhere, the energy prices have been going up significantly.
No, that was the problem we were facing a year ago.
But
from there, it has normalized.
Okay,
it has normalized. So, a year and a half ago, it had skyrocketed.
Yes.
Even a year ago, it was quite high. But last quarter when we saw it, it's normalized. Yeah.
So I think from some 5x, it's come down to 2x kind of a situation is what I hear. And I'm just trying to get my...
I have some numbers.
It's even
we've put it up on the website also. So our numbers say that electricity prices in Q2 compared to same quarter of FY21, yes, you're right, it's 1.7x.
No, it has. There has been a blip on the energy prices. It's gone up.
Yeah. But compared to last year, it's flat.
But the biggest cost in all the European companies is their people cost. So whenever volumes are fluctuating, they are not able to sustain the people cost. But our European operations, we have kept our people flat for almost 5 to 6 years. We have not increased our people. So that's something which is helping us.
So what's the broad sales and EBITDA outlook for Europe, given whatever circumstances are? The energy costs have kind of stabilized. We'll probably see something else happening after Trump era, and maybe gas prices do something else. And you know that the demand is steady. You're okay. You're meeting industry demand, but at some point in time, there will be a catch up. One way or the other, either the industry comes back so you can continue growing fairly well, or at some point in time, you know, our growth also comes down. So the question would be that, from next, say, let's 2 to 3 years, how does Europe look to you?
No, in 2 to 3 years, when stabilization is, when it things stabilize, when all the investments we have made into the electric vehicle,
yeah.
When all that, when the production all starts, we should see a positive outcome.
Okay, and between the time when everything starts to now, so the next, let's say, 25 and 26, 27, is there any risks that you see, or it's going to be pretty stable, unless there is a geopolitical exigency once again?
The risk we see is that we will be flat.
That's a risk.
But we want to grow. That we have to see how we
can. And even if we're flat, we'll probably be able to do better margins at least, I imagine.
Depends on the mix. So with the current mix, we'll definitely have to grow. If the mix is very adverse, then we'll be happy if you're staying flat. If the mix is better, or it at least if it continues the way it is continuing today, we should see some expansion.
If you see YOY, last year our margins were at 14.8%, this year it's at 16%.
Okay.
So 16.5% is a good place to be.
A good place to be.
More than mid-teen, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the challenge is the top line, actually.
Yeah, even there, we are the kind of all the investments we have made to ensure that our production lines are set up
yes.
ready for the pipeline we have created.
Okay.
That's helping us. I was mentioning, I don't know if I mentioned here or in the earlier meeting. So there is an engine for Volkswagen which is made for their entire world, a 1.5 liter engine. So now they want to continue production, they want to increase the production of that because that's what is going to help them sustain the current downturn. And that, we are the single source for that. So we are able to supply that. And so if not, because we are present across all the customers, we even won an order with BMW recently.
Yeah.
So if one goes down, the other one is picking up. And the way we have maintained, we have not dedicated any workforce or to any one particular program. So we are moving people around. We have a lot of temporary workforce which we can deploy any place. Even though that workforce is more expensive than having permanent people,
mm-hmm.
we prefer that so that we have the flexibility and in any kind of situation. And that is also, that's not the case with a lot of tier 1 suppliers in Europe, where they have to ensure that they can't move people around. So that is a big drain on their financials.
Can you talk a bit about your the new areas that now you are venturing or rather looking at? So one is industrial aluminum casting or non-auto aluminum casting. And we have also done recently an acquisition in industrial automation in under one of our Italian subsidiaries, right? And the third is that for, I think, Volkswagen or somebody now, we are doing plastic products also.
Yes.
So what's the scope there? How big can they be over a period of, let's say, next 5 to 7 years?
So first, plastic. So we have a plastics company in Europe, which we had acquired almost 8 or 9 years ago.
Mm.
It's been a small setup, hardly 3-4% of Europe's turnover comes from that company. There was a historical reason why we acquired it. There was a particular aluminium part that we were doing for Fiat, which Fiat had in those days chosen to convert from aluminium to plastic.
Mm.
Also, they had a plastic supplier who was a kind of family-owned enterprise,
mm.
and they felt that it's not sustainable for that plastics company to stay with that owner.
Mm.
Yeah, so they approached us and asked us that this is a product which we are moving out of aluminium and would you like to enter this company? So we acquired 100% of that company at that time. So we've been in plastic in Europe for almost 10 years now. that company has been doing small orders for automotive and also for non-automotive, like white goods industry or computers. So it's been doing plastic parts, injection molding parts. Yeah, this is the first time we've got a very large order from an automotive company. And this is not, I mean, this order has not been received by the plastics company in the Endurance Group, but by one of the aluminum castings company, because the aluminum castings company is pre-qualified with the automotive companies. So the product is not new for us, but this scale of order is new.
Does this find application in with other OEMs also, where you can sort of get this product done now?
Yes, yeah.
Because this is like a, so it's about 7.5 million peak revenue, right?
Yes.
With only one vendor. I
With
mean,
one
only one
customer,
customer,
that's right, yeah.
Right? So that's almost about 8, no, about 90 crore, no, 80 crore kind of a number.
Yeah, thereabout.
Have you built some more in that 2,200 crore number which we gave on RFQ? Have you bid for more plastic products also there?
No, 2,200 crore is in India. For Europe, we have not given the RFQ number.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the non-auto part?
Non-auto part, it's going to be a small addition to revenue. I don't think it is in the next 3, 4 years. It's not going to be a game changer in terms of revenue, but it's going to help us utilize capacities in our casting facilities. It's also going to help us de-risk, because if the auto cycle is uneven, while in proprietary parts we have the aftermarket. So if OEM sales is not doing well, you have the aftermarket to bank upon. In castings, there's no aftermarket also. So it's always
Which is
important.
the non-auto?
So what we are doing in Shendra, and also we have orders from Generac for the generator. We have orders from compressor suppliers in Europe.
So, I mean, I thought it was in Europe. You were asking for non-auto in Europe.
Oh, so there was this one Italian acquisition also we did in May 24,
The
right? Automation,
engineer.
industrial automation.
Engineer is industrial automation.
Huh.
That is, they used to make our automation lines.
Achha.
Along with lot of, or they used to make the entire production lines
Okay.
fully automated for lot of customers.
Hmm.
And they also used to make for Endurance.
Hmm.
Now we have made them captive.
Okay.
So they serve two purposes. For all our own production lines, they will set up the automation lines, and they also get revenue from outside. But the end use is largely automotive, we can say that.
Going forward, if we choose to do a lot of automation in India, their experience will help us here also.
And on the Maxwell, how is that going?
Their biggest customer is HMCL. We are seeing fantastic volumes from August end. So Q1 was a washout, hardly anything being purchased by HMCL. Other customers, though they are at very high margins, but those are very low volume customers. So we depend a lot on HMCL as of now. You know, we had other large orders also in Maxwell, but then those OEMs are just not taking off. Those are Hero Electric and Greaves. Yeah. Going forward, we have orders from Royal Enfield. So as and when Royal Enfield commercially launches their EV, we'll see some volumes there also. Apart from that, we are targeting, of course, more orders. There are orders in the pipeline. Let's see how they progress. We have announced in our presentation orders from, I think it's a French company called Govex. Then there's a non-auto usage in a yacht company. Yeah, so there are these niche orders, but these are small in value, high in margins. Yeah, we do need some orders like HMCL. And not only does that help Maxwell, it also helps Endurance, because we've set up our SMT line. So in Q1, when Maxwell was not selling much, our SMT lines were also underutilized.
Yes.
Since August end, we are seeing very good utilization in the SMT line. And I don't remember when, Achala, when you had traveled to Aurangabad. You have, right?
I have.
Yeah. So have you
But
seen the, have any of you seen the SMT line?
no, I didn't see it. It was coming up. I
Okay.
saw the
Yeah.
new castings And even the line which was being set up for the four-wheelers and the three-wheeler drivetrain part.
Okay. Yeah. So in the same, in the same, it's coming up in the same place. Yeah. So the SMT line, this also we've kind of designed it for the future. While we have set up only one SMT line, there's place for three or four, I guess.
And Maxwell used to buy the boards from another vendor. And then they would flash the software and sell to the customer. Today the boards are made by our own SMT, 100%. So we have retained the income within the group and the margins which come along with that.
Going forward, we are also planning to do the boards for ABS. As you know, in ABS we have done a number of backward integrations. First we did is the steel braided hoses, then we did the valves. Yeah, and now, see, typically backward integration helps when you reach a certain volume. So we've reached 400,000 volume of ABS. By the time we reach 640,000 volume of ABS, it'll make sense to do some more backward integration. And also by then we'll have more experience on electronics, so we should be able to do our own boards also.
So that, can you talk about the client concentration in the order book for Maxwell?
Hero Motor Corp
is the only, you don't have...
No, we have other orders, but they are significantly smaller than Hero Motor Corp.
The biggest is Hero Motor Corp, as of today.
Yeah, but then those orders are very important because those are all high margin orders.
But in 280 crore peak sales, then still HMCL remains the highest?
No, no, there is a lot of other clients which we have factored. It's not
in the 280 crore peak value of orders. And when do they hit the peak 280 crore?
Okay. You're referring to our Maxwell slide, right?
Yes.
Right. So there the expectation is FY27. I thought we had written that. No, it's not captured here, but yes, FY27, FY28, that would be the peak sales of these orders.
But on today's run rate of about 18-19 crores, HMCL is like virtually 100% kind of a number. Today, quarterly revenues of Maxwell is almost
70-80% of the number, yeah.
And progress on the order growth there?
Yes, we have...
I think in the previous quarter, there was one mention about...
boats and ATVs.
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Close to 100 crores of RFQs.
Yeah. Yes. So RFQ level is still similar. And so, I mean, important orders in the last 3-4 quarters have been Royal Enfield, Govex, and this boats and ATVs order.
And also motor control units.
Motor control units, yeah.
That's a new area which Maxwell is getting into.
We are using the electronics skill of Maxwell to also come up with a few more
So the drivetrain product for four-wheeler is going to use the electronics and related stuff from Maxwell, or that's something which the one that you are doing for four-wheeler, you're not disclosing the product, but I understand that the drivetrain product is going to use
Maxwell is more, you should look at Maxwell more as
a software company.
As a design house, not only software, they have the capability of designing the hardware, the PCB. Manufacturing happens in our endurance plant. So if there is a requirement for something where we have the technical know-how to make it in-house, we'll make it in-house. But if it has to happen initially from outside, we'll have to do that also.
In the existing product in two-wheeler, are we at the peak market share in each of these products that's possible with almost all the OEMs, or is
you're not at peak market share?
You're not.
Definitely not.
So, but more can happen in case of two-wheeler. I mean, four-wheeler is still like 20-30.
Definitely, we are looking at a lot of headroom there.
So, which are the... So, now we have stopped giving actually OEM-wise sales for last two quarters now, right? So, which are the OEMs where we are...
We were finding it difficult to answer OEM questions when we were doing that. Yeah, but I'd like to share with you the headroom related data. Yeah, we have an analysis of how much we supply to each model. Yeah, without reference to share of business. So if even if we have 50% share of business in some suspension, if that suspension costs say 100 rupees, we count that 100 rupees in. And then we look at the ex-factory price of the vehicle. Yeah, and we see where we are as a percentage of ex-factory price of the vehicle. Yeah, so there if I see the Pulsar, yeah, we are at, I don't want to give you the exact number, it's between 16 and 19%. Yeah, but if I look at the Shine or the Splendor, we are between 6 and 9%. Yeah, Platina is lower than Pulsar, that's around 12-13%. Because Pulsar uses more high-end suspensions and all that. So what I'm trying to say is, so Royal Enfield is again between 13% and 15%. So when you see mid-teens, TVS model is around 8% Apache. Yeah. So the headroom is there in motorcycles for Hero, Honda, TVS. Where we can bridge this gap between say 7-8% to 14-15%.
And when you say share of the X factory price, it includes what you supply for suspension, what you supply for brakes.
Yes.
And any other.
Any other.
This, even if you're supplying any aluminium casting also there,
that's
it will
also
include
counts.
This.
Yeah.
And let's say as a percentage of the total vehicle cost, let's say for example in case of Pulsar you have about 16-19%. Putting all your products together, is there still space even in that 16-19% even as of today? Forget where you are lower, but
no.
Where you are 19%
no.
Also is that?
No.
So any vehicle about 16-19% is the
peak
that you can you can do.
Yes. 19 is the peak you can say.
19 is the peak for any.
Yeah.
I'm seeing his model is complete now.
Achha, yehi baith ke pura bana liye.
Nahin, nahin.
I can see all the mechanism in his head working together.
In the group meeting, at least 5 people will kind of subscribe to your model then. It's a subscription based model.
No, they are far ahead of us, I
See, it would depend on the product, where the competition is less, where the competition is from MNCs. Typically, those products would earn higher margins.
It's it'll evolve.
Yeah.
In my experience, when you start a business, we may have to forego a bit of margin, but then we may have to allow our purchasing capabilities or localization and process improvements. Then we have to grow. So, generally, if you look at Hyundai's vendors, the margins are defined by the OEMs themselves because they will work very closely with their tier ones, with their Keiretsu kind of approach. They allow a decent margin.
Is it higher than our blended portfolio margin?
Higher than?
Our blended portfolio margin.
So in the India business, if we are doing say between 14-14.5-15%, he's asking whether Hyundai allows higher than that.
I'm looking at my history on days and I'm trying to understand how they used to do the calculation. Generally, they would allow a net margin of about 8 or 9% to the tier ones. I'm talking about those days. Now,
one particular OEM, I'm saying in general, if you compare four-wheeler products versus two-wheeler.
No, again, if you go to somebody like a Suzuki, they want the product and some money along with it. So each OEM is different. So it's but again, I know that Tata's Mahindras are very fair. When you talk about pricing perspective, but whatever be the price levels, if we look at the current price point of all the products in which we want to get into now they are sold, I'm seeing good opportunity for Endurance if we get into those businesses. Because I am also looking at the cost structure and the working principles of Endurance, we have a good opportunity of making it be margin accretive compared to the two-wheeler business also. There is an opportunity, but we have to see how things evolve.
Actually, I was going to ask you, after being 9 months in the company, which are the main areas that you are looking at where you can, you know, kind of improve the overall structure better?
So along with Raj and the entire team, we are diving deep into the operations, because there is a lot of benefit to be taken by structuring a lot of things in the way MNC is structuring themselves. MNCs have a difficulty in the agility of making decisions, because they always go abroad, come back. In terms of investment decisions, it takes a long time. And these are areas where they suffer.
Correct.
But that is not something endurance will suffer. There
Correct.
Are decisions are taken very quickly.
Correct.
And from a cost structure perspective also, the ability to localize is much better in endurance.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you look at the MNCs, the structured approach and the controls they build into every phase of operations brings in a natural cost advantage. And endurance, the way we have grown in multiple locations, we have a big benefit in bringing in those operational efficiencies. So that's what we are diving headlong into it. We want our current business to generate much more than what we are generating. And that we see a big possibility. And there, MNCs are really good.
See, the advantage that Mr. Jain has or Mr. Gyani had is that they knew the operations like the back of their hand. Yeah, if something is wrong somewhere, they could say it without any reports or something coming up. Yeah, we want to move to the next level where structurally and by design, we have all the reports which tell us what's going wrong, what's going right. Yeah, so it has to be from more, not just from the deep experience that Mr. Jain brings to the table, but also as a structure, we need to improve our design capabilities. So that is something that Raja is
surely
driving.
We are bringing lots
yeah.
of processes, lot of data capturing at the initial level, at a design level. Like in the case of alloy wheel plant we are putting up in Bitcoin. It's at a ab initio level we are bringing in, putting in a lot of controls in place that we are having the cost benefit. So it's so, more concurrent processing or finance working concurrently with the business rather than getting into the end of a period and trying to understand what the result is.
We are uniquely positioned, I'll say. We are very well positioned. At this point in time, we are very well positioned if you look at it from a people perspective. Yeah, we have Mr. Jain, who has seen it all, who has done it all. And then we have Rohan and Ria, his children, who are more aspirational. They want, Mr. Jain, all said and done, he has seen the 2005-2007 crisis. Right, and he keeps saying that I don't want any debt. Yeah, while Rohan and Ria, they come from a different mindset, so they also agree that we don't want a 1:1 debt equity ratio, but we won't be totally averse to debt as well. If there is growth, we will chase it. Yeah, so I mean, there's no conflict between these two ideologies, but I'm saying both the ideologies exist in the company. Yeah, then. When we see Ms. Abhange or Raja, they bring new perspective from the outside. But we've not lost the experience of the past. Mr. Gihani continues as an advisor for specific projects. And Mr. Ray is on our board. So I think we're uniquely positioned where we are getting a new perspective and the old experience also remains in the company.
And that's what excites for somebody like who comes in new. And with all the constraints where we had working in wherever we were, those constraints are not there. And this is extremely fertile in terms of, and any idea you give is immediately accepted, immediately put in, there's no lag.
Correct.
So that is exciting.
So operational efficiency is something that we can look forward to over the next 2 to 3 years.
That's a big focus.
Yeah.
That's a big focus. We don't have to do anything. I mean, the company was a TPM company. But over a period of time, due to the pressures on production, meeting demand, everything, maybe the TPM principles have taken a backseat. No, we just have to go back to the basics. There is nothing different which you have to do as far as the company is concerned. We just have to go back to the basics and we'll see a significant benefit from there.
Just one clarification. In terms of dual channel ABS for which we are putting, we have now purchased 440,000 sets. Is it compulsory for new models which are launched or the any model which is manufactured, whether old or new, after that cutoff date?
No, there is no compulsion of dual channel. The compulsion is only that there has to be an ABS if it is more than 125 cc.
So now, I mean, the recently what we heard from RE was that some of their models which were dual channel, for example Bullet, they want to shift back to single channel because that saves some cost and, you know, they can reduce the prices. Is that something happening?
We are getting inquiries. So while dual channel with RE has progressed a lot, we are getting inquiries for single channel also from
so
RE.
Then if
so I don't know which
if
model
want
it is
to cut
for.
Down the cost and they want to, you know, sort of not use dual channel, then what happens?
So, I mean,
so if dual channel, let's say pricing wise is 1S.
Sorry, our 400,000 existing capacity is only capable of manufacturing single channel. Our additional 240,000 capacity is capable of manufacturing dual and single channel.
And single.
So we'll be able to use that capacity
and
for
the
single
difference
channel.
Between the prices of the two?
We won't disclose that. And But you must recognize that although the price of single channels is lesser, it is incremental sales for us.
Yeah,
it will
I
be over and above
that.
The. Yeah.
But as a I'm saying 240,000 sets would have generated an X revenue on dual channel, but it will obviously
be
produce
lesser,
X minus something on,
right.
on the.
Yes.
On the
yeah.
You are just rephrasing the question.
But are people shying away in the higher CCs, very high CC, where, you know, a dual channel would have made a lot of difference to.
See, it's all about what the consumer. It's all what the consumer wants. Today's consumer, he knows what is single channel, how dual channel is more efficient.
Mm.
Yeah. So if he's willing to pay the higher price, then OEMs will produce it.
Okay.
For instance, the inverted front.
No,
folks,
this is actually the reverse way. What they are saying is that, you know, because, you know.
So the consumer is not accepting higher price for dual
well,
channel.
If somebody is going to college and he's going to buy, let's say, 130,000 rupees of an EV, he might as well buy 180,000 rupees worth of Bullet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they are saying that, you know, that if they bring the cost down, you know, that whole youngster crowd which is going into, you know, let's say an EV or something like that. In fact, the price of even Activa for that matter is now crossing 100,000 rupees, right?
Yeah.
So they might shift to a Bullet.
That will dilute the brand of the Bullet.
But will that mean, will that single channel to dual channel be a driver? I doubt it.
Yes,
I'm sure
it will reduce a lot of.
What
costs.
They will do is they may have a variant.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
That
they'll have a variant which is single channel to bring people into the showroom. But once
you're
inside the showroom.
They'll actually end up manufacturing both. And
yeah.
It will be left to the consumer to.
To pick up from what
right,
you want.
Yeah.
So as a vendor, for you, I don't think it would make
yeah,
sense.
And particularly Bullet, I don't think.
When you want to advertise the price range, how many of us go to a showroom and buy the lowest end vehicle? We don't do that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Thank you.
This is still your coordinates, right? Or have they changed?
That's my mobile number.
That's
I
correct,
don't
right?
remember
so,
my landline
okay.
number.
No, that's okay. But your mobile number and your ID remains the same.
Yes,
right?
yes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you.
See you.
All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, I'll meet you before you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I run out of cards,
okay.
But I have one or two. Complete a photo in case you want my coordinates.
My personal.
Yes,
thank you very much.
Thank you.